I'm Ken Hemmings, and he is Chris Lang, and welcome to another of these regular property briefings. Again, a warm welcome to you, Chris.
Thanks, Ken. It's good to be here.
Not that long ago, you concluded a successful marketing campaign for a rather interesting property in Melbourne Docklands. How did you originally become involved in that?
It's a rather interesting story. It goes back to 2009, where at the time I think it was Colliers had marketed the 110 car spaces in Docklands, and they'd gone expressions of interest and had had no interest. And the reason being that I think they were looking at a figure of, I think it was like 5.6 or 5.7 million. And it was an awkward size at that time. It was too big for an individual investor, and it was too small for an institutional buyer. So it was a very awkward proposition. And also with Docklands, because of, without going into too much detail, there are so many development agreements because of the complexity of the project that the paperwork, when it was stacked on top of each other for the contract, was about 12 or 15 centimetres thick. Now, a lot of it was pro forma stuff, nothing to be too concerned about, but you can understand that for a private investor or for even a larger investor to go through all that amount of paperwork and incur the legal fees to go through it wasn't very attractive. And so there hadn't been much interest. Anyway, I came across it, and it seemed to me to be a good investment in that it had an 8-year lease. And MAB were the developer, and they had a subsidiary company were leasing the car parks individually. There were 110 titles, and they were leasing the whole lot back. So you had a tenant. It wasn't that you were trying to run a car park and operate it yourself. So there was an 8-year lease in place. And to me, it seemed a good cash flow proposition, and Docklands was probably about a third of the way through its development. So, you know, to get it on the ground floor with a good 8-year lease seemed to be a good deal. So I thought about it, and I approached two of my clients who had been interested in doing something of a passive investment nature. And they were based in Sydney. I'd not met them, but I knew that they had some interest in this sort of property, and I approached them to see whether they would perhaps look at buying half of the car parks each. So in other words, they bought 55 spaces each. As far as the vendor was concerned, it was one sale, two contracts executed simultaneously. So the interesting thing was that I had not met either of these clients before. And it was not until they came down to inspect the property after we'd finalised the deal, which we did at, I think it was, ended up, the price overall was $4.55 million, which was split in two. And actually the hardest thing was to get a balanced mix of car spaces, because as you can appreciate with an office building, the higher up you are, the more attractive it is. But with car parking, the lower, closer to the ground you are, the more attractive are the car spaces. So we had to divide the 110 in a balanced thing, so each party had a representative spread on each of the floors of the car park. So that was how we put the deal together. And it was during this year, I think it was in April or May, one of the purchasers was wanting to set up a business in China, and needed to sell, and the other party agreed to sell at the same time. So that's how the properties came onto the market some 5 years after they'd purchased them originally. And as you know, it was a successful sale.
Would this be a good example of your stealth marketing techniques at work?
Yeah, I think you'd have to say it's a good example. I've been using this technique for selling property in Melbourne for the past 12 years now. It was back in 2002 where one of my larger clients was very much into IT, and I floated the idea with him of what I've been developing, and he immediately saw the benefits and embraced it, and we ended up, he sold a property for, I think it was $12.2 million that he and a group of people had bought only not 3 years earlier for about $7.5 million. So he made about $5 million on the $7.25 million purchase in the time. So at that point, we knew it was a successful concept. And look, praise the Lord, I've managed to enjoy 100% success rate from that point. So look, yeah, sure, the stealth marketing involves a clever use of web marketing techniques, but the technology by itself is not going to provide you with the results. I mean, marketing is basically applied psychology and arithmetic. In other words, what you need to do is enter into the conversation that's already going on inside your prospect's head and then take them to the point where you want them to be to make the decision that you're seeking them to make, and then to track the results. So it's not overly complicated, but you've got to get the psychology right first before you start using the very latest technology, because otherwise if the psychology is wrong, all you're going to be doing is making the same mistakes 10 times as fast. So it's, as I said, it's not that complicated, but you do have to understand the fundamental psychology behind all of this.
Perhaps you'd like to expand on the psychology behind that for the benefit of our listeners.
Yeah, look, it goes back to the days before the internet where there was direct marketing, and there still is obviously direct marketing from a male point of view. It's snail mail, as they call it. And I guess the principles then, things that I call the eternal principles. I mean, you see, the underlying psychology doesn't change. Technology may change over time, but the underlying psychology stays the same. And back then, there was a formula that direct marketers used, and that was that if you could get someone to read the first 50 words, they would then go on and read the next 500 words. And if you got them to do that, the next point was that they would go on and read the next 5,000 words. And the beauty is that, as we've discussed before with me and we cycles, the initial point of contact is effectively push marketing. But from that point on, when they choose to move from 50 to 500 and 500 to 5,000, it becomes pull psychology. They are in the we cycle that they are saying, I want more. You've interested me. I'm now choosing to take the next step. So all we've really done is use the current technology to implement that fundamental psychological principle and direct marketing formula, in that every piece of marketing, whether it is the ad, the brochure, the board, the e-flyers, whatever they are, all point back to a dedicated website. So in other words, the 50-word items are the ads and the brochures and all the marketing material. So instead of, as most agents do, they try and sell the property in those marketing pieces, that's not the purpose. All they are the gateway to get people to the web page, the home page of the website. And so the purpose is just to give them enough to interest them to know that they would like to read more. So they get to the home page or the landing page on the website, and that takes them to the next stage. That's the 500 words. It gives them more information. In this case, there was a video, and there were opportunity if they wanted to read more, they could click, and then they had to register. And that's when we got their details, first name, last name, email address, and daytime phone number. And at that point, they then went into the main website, which is effectively the 5,000 words. It's more than that, but the principle's the same, where they were choosing to read what they wanted to find out about the property. And we developed that in a story form. So it wasn't the typical information memoranda. We didn't have an information memoranda. We didn't even have a hard copy brochure. Everything was done digitally. And so we took people by the hand and led them through and anticipated the questions they might ask and provided the answers on the website in that 5,000-word stage where they were seeking out to find out more information. It was no longer us pushing it at them. They had chosen to do it, and therefore they would read almost everything and establish the level of information that they needed to take the next step as far as submitting a formal tender.
Why don't more agents sell commercial properties using public tender rather than seeking expressions of interest?
Fundamentally, they're lazy. And I don't mean physically, because agents are quite happy to take calls and run around and handle inspections. I'm talking about mentally, they're lazy. You see, most agents would rather continue with the traditional approach that they've adopted. And if you think about it, they equate movement with achievement or action with results. In other words, if they've been busy all day handling inspections, that's been a good day. Rather than to stop and analyse and adopt or adapt to the changing environment that's going on around them. And perhaps a good analogy I sometimes use is a wood chopper, and he's mad keen out there chopping up the logs, and you say to him, or the question, and he says, look, I'm too busy to stop to sharpen my axe. I mean, he'd rather continue building away and using physical labour than to actually sharpen the blade and slice through the wood even quicker. So what happened was that whereas traditionally they would hold auctions and tenders, and when the properties got larger in the sales, they moved more from auction to tender, what they were finding is that more and more, the prospective buyers were not submitting conforming tenders. They were putting in letters at the very last minute, effectively expressions of interest. And that's when the agents thought, well, if they're going to do that anyway, why do we want to run a tender? We may as well go for expressions of interest. And therefore, we won't have the disappointment of not having a tender. And then once we've got a number of people that have put in this letter, which is not binding, we'll then massage those and finally move one of them out of the group to signing a contract. Now, what happened, therefore, is that they lost the benefits of, or the prime benefit of an auction and a tender, and that is that the contract is set. When you go to auction, you bid under the contract. Now, yes, sure, you might make a modification prior to the auction that you want an extra 30-day settlement. That's fine. That's agreed. But basically, 99% of the contract is fixed. And the same with a tender, so that when you signed the contract, everyone was on the same basis and you were comparing apples with apples. When you give expressions of interest, the contract could end up anything. You know, because it's all part of, we like your figure. Okay, you like my figure. This is what I want in the contract. So, well, if we want to get the figure, we've got to agree to the changes or the terms and conditions that the purchaser wants. So the agent and the vendor have lost the power. The power has shifted to the purchaser. And what I found was that you've got to sit down and analyse what is going on, you know. And as I say to people, the problem is not the problem. The problem is in not asking the right questions. And so all I did was sit down and ask people, why is it that you're not prepared to put in a tender? All you want to do is put in an expression of interest. And the answer kept coming back, well, we never feel confident enough that we have been given all the information we need to submit an unconditional contract. Now, if you think about it, the ad goes in, they ring up, they might go and inspect it, they ask the agent for the information memorandum, that could take a few days, and then they realise, having read that, that they need a bit more, so the agent sends that. Now, you know, in a 3 or 4 week campaign, you get halfway through and you're still asking for information. And so there is a lack of confidence with the purchasers, potential purchasers, that they don't really feel that they have in their possession everything they need to sign off on a contract and commit unconditionally, which is what a tender requires you to do.
So what are the underlying reasons for your success with this stealth marketing approach for commercial property?
Well, if you go to the website for this property, which is aquavista-tender.info, you'll find and have a look at what we've done. Now, even the name itself, if you think about it, it is intuitive. It's aquavista-tender.info. In other words, it's the tender for Aquavista, and what you're going to find out is information. So it all starts. The whole thing has got to be intuitive, free-flowing, frictionless, and provide a story for the person that is going onto the website. And when you go in there, you'll find that we've provided absolutely everything a buyer could want to know about the property itself. Now, as soon as you go on the homepage, it starts out with a short descriptive video explaining everything about the 110 car spaces, and it also gives you a brief overview of the Docklands area itself. But the website contains the contracts, the leases, the plans, aerial photographs, details of the tenants and the location, and it even has some background history as to the how Docklands came into being, you know, right back to early Melbourne and so forth. Now, you say, well, is that going to sell the property? Probably not, but there's always going to be people that are going there that just want to see the whole story. So we're not just going the hard sell. We're providing the background to and substance to why Docklands is what it is, how it came about, and why it's a good location for you to purchase an investment. So we're going probably above and beyond what you would normally provide in an information memorandum, but providing substance and confidence for the people that are looking to purchase the property. But what it means is that within 30 minutes, potential buyers can assess if they're in or they're out as far as the property is concerned. And that's irrespective of whether they're here or in Hong Kong. In other words, we can deliver everything to their desktop. And the beauty is that they see the ad, they log onto the website, and they have it immediately. They don't have to ring up. They don't have to wait for it to arrive in the mail. Sometimes with properties as complex as this, it can't be emailed. It's got to be put onto a disk. I mean, you can imagine the documentation that's involved here, but we were able to break it up into small parts. We have a legal section, so there's the main conditions of the contract, the vendor statement, then we had all the certificates, then we had the plans, then we had the title. So everyone could look at the bits that were important to them or direct their consultants to go onto the website and find it straight away and download it. And then we just had a seamless path that we showed them how to, if you like, the idiot's guide to fill in the tender. I mean, it's not a matter of being patronising, but people always, I find people like to be led. They don't want to be sold, but they just want to be led. Now, you do this now, and the next step is so-and-so, and then you fill that out, then you deliver them to, and so it's all spelt out in a way that makes it, as I said, seamless. But more importantly, as selling agents, we were able to track who was interested and to what level of interest. And so Knight Frank and I, who were in this case joint selling agents, we could focus our attention upon the real buyers and not have to waste time with the tire kickers. And you think about it, as a vendor, that's what you want your selling agent to do. You want them to spend as much time as is necessary with the handful of real buyers, whether it's three or five, rather than the having to manually sift through the I mean, for the, we had going to the website, I think it was over 350 people went to the website initially. Of those, 30 registered. We had all those details. And of those, there were about three or four that were showing genuine interest in the property, and only one can buy. But you understand that the power has shifted back to the vendor and the agent, because now every purchaser has all the information they need, so they don't feel uncomfortable about submitting a conforming tender. But more importantly, they know that every other prospective purchaser also has the same information, and if they don't submit a conforming tender, then they're likely to miss out because someone else will. And so that's the real secret of, and the psychology behind, this stealth marketing approach.
You've obviously spent a fair amount of time thinking it through since you developed this clever approach to selling nearly 15 years ago. And look, I just want to thank you for taking us behind the scenes, so to speak.
Well, as I keep saying, it's not overly complicated. It merely involves understanding why something isn't working well. And then all you do is rearrange the various components to come up with a better outcome. But anyway, look, I'm glad you found it helpful.